Okay. Show of hands, has anyone heard of the 30 Miles Project before? Awesome. How did you hear about it?
Through Union Docs.
Okay, very good. Anybody prior to Union Docs heard of the project? It's okay. How'd you hear about it?
Want to say like Good Magazine.
Okay, I've heard of the piece. We always wonder like how people went about finding out, because there's never like one exclusive outlet where people found out about it. And that's what's really cool. And we'll talk about that in a minute, but kind of give you a story of like how this whole crazy shenanigan began. Bassam and I, neither of us are native New Yorkers. I grew up in Ohio. Bassam moved here from Texas, but we became friends in New York a couple years ago. And we found out that in New York City, there's about 163 mosques within a 10-mile radius. And there's hundreds of thousands of Muslims here in this city. It's completely different than what you see in other communities. So one of us said to the other one day, like, dude, wouldn't it be crazy during the month of Ramadan, the month of fasting from sunrise to sunset, wouldn't it be crazy if we went to 30 mosques in 30 days around New York City? And so in 2009, I put out this on Twitter, and I said, this is my Ramadan plan. Because the Muslim community in New York is so big, my friend and I are going to have iftar. Iftar is just the meal to break the fast. At a different masjid. Masjid is just a fancy word for mosque. Every single day. So I tweeted that out, put it on Facebook, same thing. And people started commenting left and right, like, dude, that's so cool. You should blog about it. You got to blog about this. I'm like, why? Blogs are dumb. I'm not going to read it. Like, why would anybody else want to read it? But they kept insisting, like, no, you have to blog about this. You have to blog about this. So we're like, fine. Just to shut them up, we put up the blog. And so we launched the blog. And that's me before the male pattern baldness kicked in. thanks for laughing at my misery. And we put up the blog, and not only were we getting comments and emails from our family and friends, we were getting emails from people we didn't know across the country. Then all of a sudden it was, hey, I'm in the United Kingdom, I love your blogger. Hey, I'm in China, I love your blogger. Hey, I'm in Luxembourg, I love your blog. I'm like, dude, I don't even know where Luxembourg is, but that's awesome. And it was just all this crazy energy and excitement behind it in 2009. And so that happened, and then in 2010, we wanted to do something different because we had a great time in New York, but we knew that our experience wasn't exclusive to New York City, that there's all these cool communities around the country that we could check out. And so we decided to do 30 states in 30 days. So that's how that happened, and that's how this happened. And so this was our route in 2010. We did about, in 2 years, we did about 25,000 miles of driving to a different state each day, covered all 50 states. So this was in 2010. We started in New York, went up to Maine, down to Georgia, out to Cali, and then kind of back, so essentially doing an outline of the country. And then in 2011, we started in Alaska, kind of went down the coast, and then out to Hawaii, and then like kind of finished the rest of the country, ending off in New York City. So about 25,000 miles of driving, covering every single state in the country. And what was the inspiration to really keep this project going was, in 2010, you know, we did that road trip, and it was the greatest success. And there was one particular moment where we knew that we had something, realized what we, you know, the gem we had kind of come across. And it happened in Montana. To tell you about the state, from what we understand, Montana is the only state in the entire country that doesn't have a single mosque in it. So it's the only time that New Jersey can talk trash about someone. And so we found out that there are some Muslims that are trying to build a mosque. And it's like, oh, that's cool. They don't have a mosque. What's that like? So maybe we can visit them and kind of see what their community is like. And so we head out to Montana. And if you've ever been to Montana, it's absolutely gorgeous. It's nothing but just beautiful, breathtaking scenery for miles upon miles on end. Oh, and I should also mention, we had a rental car, and a buddy of mine works at Enterprise and gave us this crazy hookup. But he was like, all right, guys, here's the thing. If Enterprise finds out that you guys are driving the car out of state, they're going to charge you all these crazy out-of-state mileage fees. So don't get a speeding ticket, don't get an accident, anything like that, and you guys should be fine. Because we did like 25,000 miles of driving, and it cost, they would charge you like 40 cents a mile, something crazy. So we're like, all right, no problem. So we're driving in Montana, and beautiful day. We're in the car. I'm bumping to Selena Gomez. Don't judge me for my music choices. And we're driving, and I see a trash bag on the side of the road. I don't think anything of it, so I drive over it. But boom, it turns out that it wasn't a trash bag. It was actually a rock, and smoke is coming out from the back of the car. So we start freaking out, and so we pull over. We wait for the car to cool down, and then the car's not starting. So, man, what do we do? So, all right, let's call AAA. Maybe they can tow us. We needed to get to the next city because keep in mind we're doing a different state every day. We can't stop at all. And so we call AAA. We pull out our cell phones. No reception. So we start freaking out. We're stuck in the mountains, middle of nowhere. We have no idea where we are. And so what do we do? So Bassam comes up with this plan. He's like, all right, I'm going to hitch a ride into town. I'm going to get my cell phone reception. I'm going to call AAA. You wait here inside the car in case the police come, something like that. I'm like, all right, plan, let's do this. So he hitches a ride, and I'm sitting in the car, and I'm waiting. And 15 minutes goes by, 20 minutes goes by, 30 minutes goes by. Man, where the hell is this kid? It's taking forever. And then I look out the window, and then I see a bunch of, like, deer run across the highway. I'm like, okay. Then I see a bunch of coyotes run across the road. I'm like, okay, I think it's time to pray. And I start freaking out. I'm like, where is this guy? And then all of a sudden, like 45 minutes later, I hear the tow truck in the back. I'm like, awesome, finally. So the tow truck comes, Bassam gets out of the car, and then Ken, the tow truck driver, gets out of the car. And to tell you about Ken, he has one of the most baller mustaches I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, I'm convinced that that's not even a mustache. That's his upper lip being protected by the wings of an angel. It's beautiful. And so I'm completely in awe of this man's mustache, and I'm just fixating, like, daydreaming about it. And we get in the car, and Bassam pulls out his camera and takes a picture of Ken. And he's like, hey, Ken, can you smile for the camera? And he's like, I am smiling. So we get in the truck with him, and we look out the window. And we pass all these crosses on the side of the road, like 30 or 40 of these. And I'm like, oh, this must be a really religious town. Maybe there's a lot we can learn about the people in Montana. And Ken's like, no, those are grave markers of people that have died on this highway. Apparently, we were driving over the most dangerous road in all of Montana. There's no highway lights, there's no traffic signs, none of that. And apparently at night, all these animals run across the road, and people end up hitting them. And there's also a lot of mountain sheep that kick rocks off the hills, and that's probably what we ran over. Anywho, we get to Montana, and the Muslims there, they have like a small little prayer space on the college campus as they're trying to build the mosque. And we're freaking out because the next day, we have to get to North Dakota, and we got to get this car fixed. Keep in mind, 30 states in 30 days. And so we start freaking out because we got to get this car fixed. We got to hit the road. Our next stop is Fargo, North Dakota. It's about 8 to 9 hours from where we were. And so the latest we can leave, because we have to break our fast at sunset, the latest we can leave is like maybe like 11, 12 o'clock. And so we get our car fixed, but it's well past noon. We start freaking out, damn it, like we're not going to make it to Fargo. What are we going to do? So we go on Google, and we type in Muslims in North Dakota. And Google tells us, did you mean Muslims in Chicago? And we find this article about a mosque in Ross, North Dakota. Ross is a town of only 48 people. And apparently they have the first mosque that was ever built in the United States. It was built in the 1920s. And I'm like, what the hell? I've never even heard of this place. This is amazing. And we're trying to find more information about this mosque. There's no website. There's no phone number. And this article is written like 5 years ago. So we don't even know if this place is still even around. So what do? We need to find a place. And so we go on Google Maps, and we find a place called Muslim Cemetery. And there was no address for the place, but there was an intersection on Google Maps. And we're like, all right, let's just punch that in the GPS, and let's just go. And so that's what we did. Completely relying on GPS, we headed out to North Dakota. And we're driving, and it's a beautiful day. And if you've ever been to North Dakota, a lot of nice scenery, but there's no highway signs to tell you where you are. There's no gas stations to ask for directions. So we're completely relying on GPS. And as we're getting closer to Ross, I start to panic a little bit because it's time to break the fast. We got to write a blog. We don't even know what we're going to write about today. What are we going to do? And the GPS tells us to take a final turn down this dirt road, and the mosque intersection should be up ahead. And so I'm looking all the way out on the horizon, and I don't see anything. And I'm looking around, I'm like, where is this place, man? We're supposed to be here. It's time to break the fast. What are we going to blog about? I'm getting mad. I'm looking out both windows. I don't see anything. And then all of a sudden, I see this. And you can see kind of like the crescent, you know, gate. Crescent is a symbol that's often associated with Islam. And there's the mosque. I'm giving you like a closer shot of it. The mosque, it was almost like someone took a mosque and just dropped it, like on this open prairie. And Bassam is standing closer to like where the sun is. And Bassam was the photographer that took all the photos for the trip, in addition to writing it as well with me. And he shows me these graves. He's like, dude, I found the cemetery. And we found things like Nazira Omar, born 1908, Ahmed Jaha, a Korean War veteran. We found World War I veterans. We found Muslims born in the 1800s. And of all places, they were living in Ross, North Dakota. And I'm so confused because I'm a history nerd. And I was under the impression that, you know, a lot of Muslims came from like the Middle East or South Asia in like the 60s and 70s, or it was spread through slavery involuntarily, you know, a couple centuries back, or through, you know, the Black Muslim movement. And I'm like, who are these Muslims though? How did they get here? And of all places, how did they end up in Ross, North Dakota? And so we're trying to figure out, and the woman who was supposed to meet with us, she couldn't meet with us that night. And so we begged her, like, look, I know you couldn't meet with us, but we really want to learn about this place. Can you please meet with us in the morning? We really want to learn about this place. And so she agrees to meet with us. Her name is Lila. And she opens up the mosque for us, and this is all that's inside. It's a small little prayer space with a few photographs. And this is Lila and her son. And she starts telling us a story. I asked her, of all places, how the hell did you guys end up here? And she told us that in the 1800s, there was a lot of Syrian and Lebanese farmers that were living in their countries. And when the Ottoman Empire, modern-day Turkey, was spreading throughout the Middle East, all these farmers didn't want to get drafted for war, but they heard about the Homestead Act in the U.S., where if you farmed the land for a few years, you could keep it. And so waves of these farmers from the Middle East came to live in places like Ross, North Dakota, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, Evansville, Indiana, and they lived there peacefully for generations. And I asked Lila, I'm like, man, you went to school in the 1940s, like race relations were bad enough among African Americans. Like, what was it like for you? In a town of only 40 or 50 people, what was that like? And she was like, well, it was fine. Because at the end of the day, we were all farmers. Didn't matter what you believed, what your skin color was, we were all there in this town to share crops. And that was really refreshing to us because there's this narrative that we were often reading about on in print and watching on TV where Muslims around the country are persecuted, victims of hate crimes, and all this other stuff. And I don't want to downplay these individual cases, but everywhere we were going, we were finding all these cool examples of Muslims living very peacefully side by side by their neighbors. And it really frustrated us because what we were seeing on this road trip was not mirroring what we were seeing on television at all. And that's really what the inspiration was about continuing, in 2011 and still continuing this project.
So what Ahmad basically did was really set up what we thought our project could be. Because when we first began this, we were just like, all right, we're just two dudes on a road trip. We're not really trying to do much. But then the second year when we did it again, traveling around the United States, we realized we're touching on something at the cusp of change, or at least because of what the majority of the media really says about Muslims, we're not really seeing these really, really cool stories. And we thought that now that we've got this great audience base of Muslims, we really need to start reaching out to really get a lot of people that wouldn't necessarily care about Muslim stories. So how do we do that? We have to do that in really interesting ways. So this is day three. I'm going to talk about day three. I'm going to give two case studies of two different days that we did in 2011, this past year. So what we did in day three, we were in Corvallis, Oregon, a small little town where this guy named Momo came out of nowhere. So Momo, I'm not sure if y'all heard of this guy. This guy is called a Christmas tree bomber. So in Portland, Oregon, I think the day of the lighting of the Christmas tree, this guy was going to launch some C4s and he was going to blow up the Christmas tree. But it was actually a sting operation that the FBI was doing, so he was caught. Anyway, this guy was very large in the Muslim community, and a lot of people were really pissed at what he did. So when we were in Corvallis, they were all like, man, Momo really fucked us up. He really messed with things. And then we're like, well, would you all be interested in sharing some words with Momo? They were like, well, we're not allowed to talk to Momo because the government actually has him in a high maximum security prison where no one can speak to him. So all his close friends had a lot of stuff to say to him, but they never knew how to reach him. So we came up with an idea. Now, what if we use a live scribe pen, which essentially gives you the ability to write anything on paper, and then it gets transcribed onto a computer? That what if we gave his close friends a pen to basically write whatever the hell they wanted to, and then use that as a post to really show people that, like, the communities that are left after these kind of things happen, when a sting operation happens in a community, what are the remnants of these communities? So this is Riot, one of his closest friends and the guy that knew him. So we gave him a pen, gave him some paper, we're like, all right, write whatever the hell you would to Momo. So this is what he wrote. Dear Momo, the good old days where we would go out on Friday night, have a good time together with all of our friends, but sadly that all came to a sudden stop once you chose to do all those messed up things. Anyway, he ends the whole thing with saying, miss ya, and playa says what's up. So that was his way of signing on. Here's another friend of his. He actually knew Momo the longest, because Momo is a Somalian refugee. This guy's name is Ali, and what he writes is actually pretty powerful. The biggest fear when fighting a monster is becoming a monster yourself. A child of the light discerns the difference between righteousness and blind aggression. The path towards peace and prosperity is paved with patience. Forever forward, my friend. So his words were actually quite endearing, and we actually saw that once we put this up, a lot of people ended up picking it up. So we actually realized that even though we had an engaged Muslim audience, how is it that we could actually reach out to a larger audience base? We realized that if we start using new media in different ways, that people would be compelled by the way we're actually communicating with them, that they might actually be interested in the stories that they're hearing. So by using a live scribe pen, Gizmodo put it up on their main page. Like, what would you tell your friend if he was a terrorist? Boing Boing picked it up, and a couple other news outlets picked it up. That was one story that was actually really cool. I'm going to actually skip towards our presentation. And okay, great, right here. So another case study that I want to share with y'all is... one second, that's weird. Did I come? Okay, great. was on day 24 of this last trip, we actually met with this hip-hop artist named Freeway. Has anyone know, anyone heard of Freeway here before? Okay, yeah, I forgot we're in Williamsburg. So, anyway, so Freeway is a rapper. He's very big in the East Coast. Philly, they call him Philly Freezer. He's a big deal. And he's Muslim. So he was going through a lot of like a lot of worries about him being a Muslim rapper because a lot of his lyrics, a lot of stuff that he was dealing with, were kind of contradictory to what Islam would say. So we actually got him and his friends to rap in this Indian grocery store. So I'm going to show you this little clip that we shot. Can we put the audio, please?
So heavy, it'll break the levees if you sit it on it, honest. Underneath the nut, yo, Freezer, you a mess. They often tell me, Freezer, you the best. But my Akis tell me, Freezer, you should stop. You are straying from the hawk. And you don't want to be sinning when you die. Because that's how you will stand in front of God. This is making me depressed. Yeah, I'm living with regrets. But my regrets are most people's lusts. To get the fame and the checks, pressure bust pipes and I pray I don't bust. First thing I do in the morning is I make voodoo and pray. Fudge it, but it's sad because I be on the corner by door trying to feed my daughter and my son. I got a gun and a nigga on me funds. I'm trying to smash him by answer. I know the truth's one of my worser than the Kappas and my jeopardizing my hereafter for this earth. See, my cousin Hemi get blasted by the cops, put in the box. So I gotta put my passion in a verse, put his casket in a hearse. L. Oxford Mash did the same spot. I took your heart, a gift and a curse. The shit hurts. Shit ratchet where I live. I back to the fence, gotta repent by my grid. Looking for the cops to kill my cousin Heaney. Now I'm 4-4 mad gripping. AR ab with him. We need to be somewhere reading Quran, but we channel live. All we do is spark madism. But we still trying to make it to Jenna. Fuck it. I hope we all there. See him there, me there. But just know, if you move that cold, cold, beware. And you can build your faith in the ranks. It's a lot to each share. Yeah. Mm.
So every day, not necessarily every day, but a lot of the days we put up video with our posts. So every day while we're traveling, we had to put up a post the next day to really help explain what we're doing, where we are. And what we did was we tried our best, once again, to reach and engage these different communities. So putting up this one video, it ended up getting big on all the hip-hop blogs. I don't know anything about hip-hop, Aman does, so it was actually kind of a big deal that we were on Rap Radar, Two Dope Boys, Hip-Hop XL, like some of these big blogs picked up 30 Mosques, which is so crazy, but actually shows that if you actually start interacting with these different groups of people, and what you start doing is using interesting ways to connect with them, you start reaching a larger audience that you probably didn't know that you could even reach. So that was just a little idea, or I guess like what I would give my 2 cents in transmedia. Just to sort of end what we're talking about is what's next for us. So because we've actually got a very large group of following for 30 Mosques, what happened this past year was really interesting. When we were doing our own 30 Mosques trek around America, there were 9 other people around the world that were doing it around their community. So there was Malaysia, Indonesia, Toronto. What am I missing?
There's India, Scotland, D.C., San Francisco. I think it was New York, but they quit halfway in. Losers. there's another one I can't remember. Yeah. But yeah.
But there's quite a lot. So there's this movement that's really happening around it. And we're working on this one transmedia idea right now that we're kind of fleshing out a little bit. But essentially, if we gave people daily challenges every day based on like a Mad Lib where people can then do certain tasks and then it creates a small little video story, we thought it'd be quite interesting. I'll put out the link if y'all want to see the little project, but I think we're running out of time. But that's that. And there's also a film being worked in. We had some filmmakers from PBS following us. So I think that's it for us. Thank you so much.
One other thing I forgot to mention about the project. A lot of people ask, you know, how do we come up with the financing for it? And in 2010, we had this foundation agree to finance the entire project. And about two or three weeks before the trip, for whatever reason, they decided to back out. So we start freaking out. Like, dude, we have no money. What the hell are we going to do? And so we went to Facebook and we went to Twitter and said, okay, guys, we need $6,000 to pay for this rental car, pay for the travel and everything. We guys really need your help. That's 600 people at $10 a pop. Come on, we got this. In about a week and a half, we raised the entire amount, all through online donations. And then the next year, in 2010, because our project was a little more ambitious, what we wanted to do, through Kickstarter, we were able to raise about $12,000 to $13,000, all through individual donations, no major corporate donors or anything like that. And that's really what the success behind this project was. was this grassroots effort. And even our route was mainly determined by people emailing us and saying, hey, I see you're going to Chicago. Don't go to that mosque. You should really go over here. This part is really cool. And people give donations, like, left and right. There was even, like, little girls. Like, one little girl, she was, like, 11. She was, like, selling lemonade for us and, like, all this other stuff. And it was amazing, like, really how much energy and excitement people have behind it. And that's really what the success is the grassroots movement, not really us. So,
thank you.